Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Bridget Bergen, senior reporter in the WNYC and Gothamist newsroom, filling in for Brian today. Now we shift from the state of the national economy to a vital element of New York's economy, the state budget. That spending plan is now a full 12 days late. Lawmakers blew past the April 1st budget deadline once again this year, with ongoing fights over housing, education, Medicaid spending, and a lot more. So what is the effect of these protracted negotiations? Like the latest fashion trends, are we also making a return to the 1990s when it comes to budget fights? Back then, they stretched deep into the summer months. Or does a late budget not really matter as long as the final deal is a good one? Well, joining me now to help explain what is happening in our state capital and whether we'll see a state budget anytime soon is our own WNYC and Gothamist Albany reporter, John Campbell. Hey, John. Great to chat with you always.
Good morning, Bridget. Welcome from rainy, gross Albany, New York.
It's pretty rainy and gross here, too, to be honest. Listeners, if you have a specific issue that you are watching in the ongoing budget negotiations, I want to hear from you. Maybe you are a renter or a landlord watching for what's happening in the proposed housing deal, or maybe you're a parent with concerns about education spending. Give us a call. The number is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You can also text that number or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Okay, so John, let's put this year's late budget in a little bit more context. How much of a trend are we starting to see from the Hochul administration when it comes to a late budget agreement?
Well, I mean, Governor Hochul took office in 2021, late 2021. So she's had, this is her third budget cycle since then, and all three have been late. It was 8 days late in 2022. It was 32 days late last year, and that was the latest since 2010 when that budget was passed in August, a phrase that sends a shiver down my spine as somebody who has to cover the ins and outs of this thing. And it's 12 days late and counting this year. So there's absolutely a trend that you know, the Governor Hochul has not prioritized on-time budgets. And, you know, there's some argument that maybe governors can use that leverage to their advantage because lawmakers don't get paid during the time where the budget's late. I mean, they get back pay at the end of it, but in the process, they don't get paid when the budget's late. So maybe you can use that to your advantage a little bit. But yeah, no, three budgets and they've all been late.
Well, Hochul's predecessor, former Governor Andrew Cuomo, certainly made those on-time budgets a symbol of well-functioning government and a tool to lobby lawmakers, or strong arm, some might say. Similarly, we've heard legislative leaders talk derisively about how late budgets are a sign of government dysfunction. You spoke with someone who has been part of negotiating budgets from both vantage points. That's former Governor David Paterson, who also served as a state senator representing Harlem and Upper Manhattan in the state Senate for 2 decades. Here's his take on a late budget.
Honestly, as long as the agreement is reached by the end of April, that by the next year, nobody really talks about it. They're not even really talking that much about the fact that they had a total breakdown in communication and didn't settle it until mid-May last year.
So, Paterson, picking up on the point you made that last year's budget was 32 days late, setting aside the rhetoric, what are the other real impacts of a later budget here? Beyond the impact on state lawmakers and their salary, it's not like we're facing a looming state government shutdown, right?
No, this isn't like the federal government when, you know, when they blow a budget deadline, when Congress and the president blows a budget deadline, then things actually shut down. Employees are furloughed, et cetera, et cetera. You know, generally, the big concern on the state side is payroll, paying state workers. There's hundreds of thousands of state workers who rely on their paycheck from New York state agencies, authorities, et cetera. And you want to make sure that they get paid. And to do that, you have to pass kind of like, it's basically a bare bones, short term, we call them budget extenders in Albany parlance. And that basically gets you to the next payroll date or whatever date the governor chooses, really, because she gets to write them up. And the Senate passed its fourth budget extender yesterday. The Assembly is supposed to do the same thing in the next couple hours here. And it's about $1.3 billion. It'll get us through Tuesday. And then if there's no deal by then, they'd have to pass another one.
Wow. Well, let's get into some of the sticking points. And I want to start with housing. But before we get into the details, can you just talk about why such a major policy proposal is part of budget negotiations in the first place?
Well, it's Albany tradition, right? It happens every single year and through various governors that governors have jammed a lot of policy that doesn't really have a whole lot to do with the finances of the state into the budget. The budget is this collection of 10 different bills, and five of them are generally financial, and five of them are changes to state law to implement the budget. But all the time, major policy gets negotiated as part of this budget process. And part of that is because the state constitution and the courts over the years have given governors just a ton of power in the budget process. They get to author the original budget bills, and they really kind of lead the negotiation process, and lawmakers are kind of restricted in the ways that they can change language in these budget bills. So governors try to use that to their advantage, and they put in these policy items that don't really have anything to do with finance.
Okay, so let's talk about housing. It's been a key issue for Hochul and the legislature, but there have been some powerful forces pushing back on the current proposals. What's the latest version of plans you've heard talked about? I understand there's some both incentives to spur development as well as some protections for tenants.
Yeah, I mean, if our listeners here are thinking that they've heard this conversation over and over again for the last 2 years, they would be correct, because this is the second straight budget cycle that Governor Hochul and lawmakers have tried to reach consensus on a broad plan to create housing. Last year, they failed. They were not able to get it done in the budget. They took it out of the budget. They tried again at the end of the legislative session. They weren't able to do that. So here we are for round two or three, depending on how you look at it. And really, what's starting to coalesce, what has been coalescing really for the last several weeks and months, is this deal where Governor Hochul is pushing for a renewed tax credit for New York City developers who include affordable units. It used to be known as 421A.
Sure.
It expired a couple years ago. She wants to re-up that credit and revamp it. And while legislators are pushing for some sort of protections for existing renters, additional eviction protections, it's known as good cause eviction generally, and basically would say that you can't be evicted from your home without good cause. Maybe you trashed the place. Maybe you didn't pay your rent. And there's negotiations going on about pairing those two items together, and then what would consider the details of good cause, right? So there would be a measure in there that would say, well, you can't hike rent by an unreasonable amount, and if you do, then a tenant would be able to challenge that in housing court. But what is an unreasonable amount? And under the original bill, it was 3%, a 3% annual increase, or 1.5 times the rate of inflation. Now they're looking at maybe 10% or 5% more than the rate of inflation, whatever's higher there. And so there's a lot of negotiation going on. Nobody really seems to be very happy with anything that's happening here, but they're kind of moving in that direction.
Well, John, not surprisingly, we have some callers who are interested in these housing negotiations. Let's go to Simon in Brooklyn. Simon, you're on WNYC.
Hey, good morning. So I'm a small landlord, and I guess the good cause eviction law I never raise my rent on anyone unless my prices go up dramatically. But the good cause eviction law as written would incentivize me to raise the rent on people where I otherwise wouldn't, because it's a use it or lose it increase. If I don't use it this year, I can't use it next year. And I realize that it's a very delicate situation. There are probably some very bad actors who are landlords. When it comes down to it, on Christmas Day, when the boiler breaks, I'm in the basement fixing it. When the roof leaks, I'm on the roof fixing it. It's a hard job. And I know that there are more tenants than landlords, so something like this will get passed eventually. And then maybe the real estate will fall apart because I'll sell it to somebody else who doesn't care. That's it.
Simon, thanks for your call. Thanks for the perspective from a small landlord. I want to take the flip side slightly. Roberta in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to bring up the rent-stabilized situation in Manhattan. You know, large buildings, small buildings, they are not being publicized on what is available in rent-stabilized apartments. In buildings, they have things on websites, but there's no indication of rent-stabilized apartments. The hoarding of apartments, you can't call 311. Nobody knows how to deal with it. You know, people that live in the building for years can't seem to move into a larger apartment. Either the super, the resident super has to move into these, or the owners have family members move in for a year, and they're just waiting for this whole rent-stabilized law to go away. And in the meantime, you know, we have Airbnbs, we have short-term rentals from corporate companies that move people in and out. I mean, residential buildings no longer are residential. It's just a real business. And I understand, you know, that you need to maintain buildings, but the buildings that are stabilized and not stabilized, that rent that is not stabilized, they make a lot of money. Okay. So it makes up for the rent stabilized, which is becoming fewer and fewer.
And Roberta, just to clarify, you're a rent stabilized tenant? Is that the perspective you're calling from?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. And I have many friends that, you know, we're cities, you know,
sure.
We're city dwellers, born and raised here. So this is our home, you know, and yet we don't have the opportunity to be a part of getting into a larger apartment or moving from building to building because God forbid you say you're moving and then they think, you know, you're out. So
Roberta, thank you.
And there's no city official office that can even help us with this.
Roberta, thanks for that call and that perspective. I'm sorry to cut you off because I want to get is some reaction also from John because, you know, I'm not going to ask you to go deep with us, John, into all the variations of the housing market here in New York since you are up in Albany. But certainly, I'm sure you're hearing some of these issues being discussed by lawmakers as they try to nail down this deal, specifically the concerns of some of the small landlords and you know, some of the large landlords and how they feel about the potential for a good cause protection being instituted. And on the flip side of that, you know, how to ensure that the housing stock's available for renters who are looking for it. How much are you hearing and who are some of the players that are helping to negotiate this deal that may not be just the lawmakers?
Well, there's one thing that's being negotiated right now that kind of touches on issues that both callers brought up there, and that is what's known as IAIs. That is individual apartment improvements. That is an issue that applies to rent stabilized units. And there's since 2019, there's been a cap. Basically, you can increase rent if you are a landlord if you make improvements to an individual apartment. Maybe it is maybe you renovate the whole thing. Maybe you renovate the kitchen. Maybe you install new equipment or replace equipment, et cetera, et cetera. You can raise rent by a marginal amount to help you pay for that, but it's capped at $15,000, and the way that it works out to about $80 a month, $90 a month, somewhere around there. There are negotiations happening now to try to increase that cap, maybe to 20, 25, 35, 50, something around there, $50,000, which then the landlords, small landlords, could pass this off to their tenants in general. Tenant groups are they are raising enormous red flags about this. And actually, some of the small landlord groups are too, because they say it's not really getting into the issue that they're looking for. But so anyway, all of these things are under negotiation still. Some of the main players, I mean, generally it's the governor, the Senate leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and the Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastie. But then the housing chairs in the two legislative houses are involved in this too. Brian Kavanaugh is the Senate housing chair, and Linda Rosenthal is the Assembly housing chair. They're both Manhattan Democrats. Those are really the key players involved here.
And I want to hear a little bit from what Brian Kavanaugh said to you about the likelihood of them figuring out all of these details sooner rather than later. So, John, excuse me, you spoke with the chair of the State Housing Committee, Brian Kavanaugh of Manhattan, as you mentioned, about whether some of these housing elements would stay in the budget deal once they reach it. And this is what he said to you.
What is necessary to do a budget is to authorize the spending, but we know it's a longstanding practice in New York to do big policy initiatives in the budget. There's been a strong sentiment expressed by the governor and the Senate and the Assembly to do a housing package in the budget, so that's the operating assumption now, but I don't think it's, you know, I've been here for a budget passed in 9 increments concluding on August 4th, so, you know.
Don't do that to me.
don't, if you don't encourage that, I won't encourage it.
Okay, so yikes, John. I'm hoping for all of our sakes you are not still covering this in August, but what did you make of Kavanaugh's answer on the future of the housing plan?
Well, I am. I try my best to be an impartial, non-biased journalist, but I am very partial against having to be in the state capitol in July and August to cover budget negotiations. So I'll wear that one on my sleeve. But the question that I had posed to him was: is there a chance that housing negotiations fall out of state budget negotiations? That would be, like we said earlier, the second year in a row that's happened, and that would be a major blow to the governor and lawmakers, who do all seem to agree that housing needs to be, we're in a housing crisis, it needs to be dealt with. So he said anything's possible, but you heard him there. He said, you know, there's a strong sentiment to continue with these budget negotiations. It does seem like they are nearing an agreement, but tenant groups are pushing against, you know, the IAI stuff I said there, and what they see is watered down good cause evictions. Landlords want to kind of broach the idea of vacancy decontrol for or at least being able to hike the rent of vacant apartments to put them back on the market and in the rent stabilized program. And, you know, and developers aren't happy about the good cause eviction protections either. So it's there are some rumbling from advocates that maybe we'd be better off if we take it out of budget negotiations and try again in June before lawmakers go home. And that's why I asked him that. But so far, it seems like it's remaining in budget talks.
I'll tell you, John, and I'm sure it won't surprise you, we have still a lot of callers and texts coming in with questions related to housing. And I just want to apologize in advance. I know we're going to talk more about this in the week ahead, but we've got some other issues I want to talk about before we run out of time with John. Education spending. It makes up an enormous share of the state budget. In recent years, advocates have been relatively pleased, I think, with state funding levels. But this year, things seem a little bit more complicated. Some districts say they're facing cuts. Hochul says they're not. What's going on here, John?
Yeah, this is a couple of different proposals that the governor has put out regarding education. I mean, schools across the state rely on state funding to put together their budgets, they get a big chunk of their funding from the state. The state, Governor Hochul proposed spending $35 billion in education funding this year. And that's an increase, but it is not as high of an increase as it would have been if she didn't make two key changes. One is she wants to get rid of the hold harmless provision. That's a provision that prevents school districts from getting less than they did the year before. even if their enrollment's down, even if the formula as the state uses to calculate how much districts get say that they should get less, they get at least as much as the year before. If she were to get rid of that, as she wants to, more than half of school districts would see a decrease in their foundation aid. That's the main source of funding from the state. So there was a huge pushback against that. Lawmakers in particular don't want to see that happen because, you know, they want to go back to their school districts and say, hey, I delivered for you. I got you more money. And that, you know, it's an election year this year, too. So all 213 state lawmakers are on the ballot. The other thing has to do with inflation. The governor kind of wants to smooth out inflation adjustments for school funding over a longer period of time, 10 years. Rather than 1 or 2 years, and that's still under negotiation. That one may see it through. The hold harmless provision, Governor Hochul has basically already said that that's not going to happen this year.
Okay. Well, of course, we have to ask the New York City question with, you know, a lot of attention being paid to the renewal of mayoral control of schools. Is that something that's expected to be resolved during the state budget negotiations, or is that going to get pushed beyond to some point later in the session?
Nope, that's not happening in the budget this year. And that's not a huge surprise. The governor did put a multi-year extension of mayoral control of New York City schools in her budget proposal. The legislature has taken it out. We do this dance every time it comes up, right? And Albany has to approve of the extension of mayoral control. It expires in June. Mayor Adams is looking for a longer-term extension. The legislature tends to go shorter term, and they attach different strings to that because they have leverage here. And that's what happened 2 years ago when Mayor Adams got a 2-year extension of mayoral control, but the legislature also passed a bill that limits the size of New York City classrooms, and that's something that will be implemented over the coming years. So we'll see this play out more in May and June. That's the second wave of big negotiations in Albany right before lawmakers end their legislative session. That will really dominate talks then.
And Medicaid costs. That Medicaid, of course, the state and federal program provides health insurance to low-income New Yorkers. It costs the state tens of billions of dollars. How has this become a sticking point in budget negotiations?
Yeah, it kind of always is a sticking point in budget negotiations, and that's because it takes up such a huge chunk of the state's budget, the state spending side of the state budget. I mean, Medicaid, the governor's proposing about $30 billion. School aid, the governor's proposing $35 billion. You add those two things, just those two items together, and you get to half of the state's general fund spending. I mean,
wow.
That is a big, big deal. So, you know, the governor wants to, she is pushing about $1.2 billion in cuts to long-term care and similar programs for the Medicaid program, which, is the program for lower-income New Yorkers to get health care. New York spends more, just a lot on Medicaid compared to other states. Spending would still go up in her proposal, but those $1.2 billion in cuts to long-term care, similar programs, that is really rankled hospitals, nursing homes. Their hospitals in particular are through their trade groups, are airing ads that are really knocking Hochul and pushing for an increase in Medicaid rates. So yes, it's a sticking point, but it's always kind of a sticking point, and that's one that's still being negotiated.
I want to touch on two more issues quickly since we're running out of time. You reported earlier this week on a potential crackdown on license plate covers, which, you know, of course, allow drivers to avoid paying tolls, speeding tickets, red light camera fines on the state's roads and bridges. I'm curious how this proposal would work, why it's taken so long for someone to come up with something like this. And is this considered sort of a revenue raiser in terms of the budget?
Yeah, the governor's proposals in her original budget proposal, she proposed all sorts of stuff. And that would be, you know, increasing penalties on people who cover their license plate. It would allow police to more easily confiscate license plate covers. It would ban the sale of what are known as vanish plates, which, if you don't know what those are, it's a kind of a cover you put on your license plate, and maybe you got a little button on your key, and you hit the button, and boom, your license plate disappears when you are going under those cameras that pick up your license plate when you're going over a bridge or a tunnel or a red light camera. So the governor's pushing that. The legislature has long been pushing, or some factions of the legislature, I should say, Leroy Comrie in the Senate and Kenny Burgos in the Bronx, they have been pushing for measures to make it easier for people to challenge a cashless toll if they they feel like they've been wrongly charged, or make it easier to see how much they owe in tolls, or maybe capping late fees, because we've heard of situations where people have owed thousands and thousands of dollars in late fees, let alone the fines. So this is all under discussion now. It's moving in a direction where it looks like there will be some sort of compromise in the budget, but it's not finalized yet, but that's one of these kind of smaller issues that are still out there.
Well, there are several other of these smaller issues that I wish we had more time to talk about, cracking down on unlicensed weed shops, the issue of retail theft, but I don't think we're going to have time for it. The one question, John, when do you think we're going to have a budget?
That's a great question. I wish I had a crystal ball. I don't. I mean, the absolute soonest would be this weekend. You see some sort of handshake deal between the governor and the legislative leaders, and maybe they vote on it next week. But if that doesn't happen, then we're probably looking at after Passover, and because lawmakers won't be in time for that. So late April, early May, kind of where we ended up last year.
Wow. Well, we're going to leave it there for now. I know we will be talking to you again soon. My guest has been WNYC and Gothamist Albany reporter John Campbell. John, good luck up there in the Capitol.
Thank you, Bridget.